Elegant Sea Urchin, a continuous performance witnessed by no audience, is written, produced, and presented by Studio Swoon as part of the Greater Swooncraft Creative. It would mean a lot if you shared or supported us. Head over to elegantseaurchin.xyz for more. And before the program starts, this seems a little out of place for our prelude message. But if you keep your enemies closer than your friends, then how do you not see their point of view and understand them at least a little? Hey, you, listening, thanks. And enjoy. Have you heard about the moon? One of the Zetid histories says that it rose from the core of our tangerine speck, that it was the herald of Azathoth's appearance. An event so profound that it ripped our reality into fragments. And now we wander, lost, not truly whole. Why we loathe, how we thrive in misery. It was documented not as a single thing that consumed anything physical, but something that engorged itself on hope. So fat at the end by the hope of billions that it fell into a slumber in a fathomless dimension for what we want to believe will be forever. But this year I am reclaiming hope, and so be it if the hope gorger out of the moon wakes to despair me, because I'd rather believe in the better things that could happen than despair over the pain in my past. I love Enzo. Even if he's gone, no one can take that from me. Right? The time I had with him was special. Irrevocable. I'm certain. I remember Kay telling me the peppercorns thought the gorger fell from the smogs. Maybe creating the smogs or causing the glowing dawn. They aren't specific, he said, but when they claim a theory, they don't let it go. The part that might be believable, if you can catch what they're casting, is that the moon was further out than the smogs, but not further than Sol, and certainly no further than the stars they search for. Whatever truth you hold in sanity doesn't change the truth that is no further than beneath my skirts at the moment. We had reached the moon. It was Heather. We were quiet. And that was frustrating, 'cause I wanted to hear her voice. If I asked you to join us, to jet across the horizon, would you? And she sighed. I don't know if it was good or bad. She doesn't have the practice to make that obvious over the waves. But she said, "How long until you're back?" It's freezing how much we obviously miss each other. So I told her, "I'm sure you're catching my casts. You probably know where we are." "I am, and I do, but I want you to tell me, and only me, not your listeners right now." Well, I kicked my legs up and drifted to the floor, half smiling. Half grimacing in pain, half wanting to cry from how much it hurt to miss Heather. I still don't know what I'm doing out here, and the Zetid Dooks hurried on ahead of us for something since my leg was slowing us down. Well, we're just past the Dunes of Grief. Trajectory is over the moon still. Gotta meet up with Jones. I told her that, at this rate, it'd probably be the end of the season when we make it to Lunatha. And I could almost hear Heather smile. I'm already at the seconds of the shore, she began. And we talked like that. I told her about Sina's puzzle box, and Yule's runes, and Jones's book. And Heather told me about her apprenticeship, and her pop, and things. And before we were done, I asked her again, what would it take to get you to join me over the curve? She didn't take the bait, but she told me in the same way that she cursed the Eldritch. I love you, Faye, and so did and do a lot of other urchins and creatures on this tangerine speck. I'd never seen a wild plurality of pobbles before. There's the one or two small groups that live in the abandoned tunnels through the cove. Jones was worried, but I told him that pobbles are more hostile when there's fewer of them. We steered clear to reach the first steps of the white, crunching plain. I don't doubt that many of you have been to the moon, but I underestimated just how bright it is. As we stopped to let my swollen leg rest, Jones said he had to go on ahead to change some of our plans. As the Dukes dipped beyond the blinding moon rock, something sprang to my mind. I wondered if the strange light I had been seeing in the sky was some refraction of this blinding place. A disappointing dread tickled my neck as I looked up from where Jones had been. Listeners, you know that it was still there, glimmering like an eldritch lore. One for us lesser mortal things. But it wasn't directly above Jones, no. Not on his path, but off course. Well, not technically off course, of course. It loomed on the course I had set for us, right at the center of the lunar plains. My whole reason, there's rumors of Sina wisps that come out to feed during certain Goldenshine smogs. They're supposed to eat on the glophisms. Well, they don't eat them. They fuse and become these beautiful, unnamed, bioilluminated things. In Cryptinth Terror Husbandry, I kept calling these Morphowisps. There were no images of them, and only one account of them. And I kept bringing them up in class through the seasons. Faculty head seemed a little bit frustrated. He said that if I wanted to name them, to go over the moon and wait with the rest of the terror researchers. The good thing, the reassuring thing, there was an outline accompanying the glimmer. Something attached to it blotted out the golden shine behind it. It had a reddish hue, was large, something traditionally made, long spires at angles for mapping time, seasons, years. I think there were centennial spires, but I never paid much attention in higher chronicle charting. Grimham said decennial reading gets most through life just, well. You know, listeners, now that I think about it, if all we have is time to trade in, then oh, dollars of the magenta dimensions. If we don't understand centennial and millennial chronology, can we get begthucked by the tendrils? I hope not. I hope that the pain of my leg is just making my mind slurry. I do think I'm gonna try to find a Riemann chronology, though, just in case.